In the new book, Train, Riding the Rails That Created the Modern World from the Trans-Siberian to the Southwest Chief, journalist Tom Zellner takes a global inventory of an indispensable mode of transportation, the railroad, weaving the history of this mammoth technological innovation into the entertaining story of an actual rail journey he took around the world. Tom Zellner chronicles how trains truly changed civilization. Again, the title of the book is Train, Riding the Rails That Created the Modern World, From the Trans-Siberian to the Southwest Chief. It's published by Viking, and a great pleasure to welcome Tom Zellner back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being with me.
What got you thinking about trains?
When you think about how the modern world really found its shape, no machine more than the railroad is responsible for that. This is what gave us four-season food. This is what gave us the beat of our music, the shape of our cities, the way that we think about space and time, the shape of nations, the way that we've fought wars, the way that 500 million people get to work every morning. All around the globe. And so it's sort of a world in a blade of grass, you might say. You look at the railroad and you see so much else about the way that we live our lives.
We will get into its creation and its impact in a moment, but just skipping ahead, is it sad to you that we don't respect it more now?
Yes. We turned our backs on the railroad as a nation after World War II, and there are reasons for this. The investment and the excitement went into our interstate highway system, and modern America arranged its life around those highways, whereas in Europe, the focus was on repairing bombed-out tracks from the war. And the Marshall Plan went largely into funding railway ministries in Europe. And this was seen as sort of a New Deal-style make-work program for people without jobs. It succeeded brilliantly. We can, you know, argue over which was really the most effective sort of internal transportation mechanism. But it's no surprise that Americans who go traveling in Europe always marvel at how easy it is to get around by train and how comparatively difficult it is in the United States.
Mm. And you write about the birth of the locomotive in England, and really that's where the story begins in
yes,
many ways.
Yes, in the 1820s. It was sort of a melding of three things that kind of came together all at once in this sort of brilliant improvisation. First of all, there was the steam engine, which, of course, kickstarted the Industrial Revolution. There was this idea of putting smooth wheels on smooth rails, which is an incredibly energy-efficient way to move heavy goods. It's a fantastic trick of physics. And, you know, this has been known to humanity really ever since antiquity. Cart paths were sort of grooved into the stones of ancient cities, and this is the way that mine owners used to get ore out from underground. And then it was also that coal economy in England. After England was deforested, coal became the way that you heat your house. And so you had a market need. You had this sort of huffing and puffing new development and technology. And you had this smooth rails, steel rails thing. And they all came together brilliantly.
You write about the impact of the train, and there is sort of a global story there of the impact that it had when it came, because it was a huge impact on wherever it arrived.
Yeah, it could not help but become sort of a hinge point in history. I mean, look to the United States. Most of the cities, particularly west of the Alleghenies and many, many, many on the eastern seaboard, you look deeply at their nativity stories and you're going to see railroad tracks. You know, most of our American towns and cities were founded because the railroad punched through the wilderness. This was a way to sort of create a cluster of population that was not on a waterway.
In looking at this story, you decided to take a journey of your own. And what was the overall plan that you wanted to go forward with?
I wanted to understand how trains affect, first of all, the daily lives of, as I said, 500 million people, 500 billion people around the globe, and to talk to my fellow passengers, to learn more about seven major rail systems in the world and to explain the tremendous ripple effects through history of this invention and where the potential lies, why we as Americans have tended to shun this as a method of passenger travel, and what we can do to rebuild the glorious system of rails that we used to enjoy.
The trip took how long?
This was a journey, quote-unquote, that took approximately 4 years.
And you knew where you wanted to go, I assume, and yet were there add-ons along the way of, I have to add this, I have to add that?
Yeah. As a traveler, and I think most listeners will appreciate this, you know, flexibility serves a traveler very well, particularly on sort of these cockeyed journeys that we sometimes take. You know, we have to be prepared to take detours, to perhaps divert from the schedule. It's a fascinatingly varied world out there, and it's sometimes hard to see it if you don't allow yourself the time to sort of make things up on the fly.
When you say that we turned our back on trains and train travel, what do you think led to that? Why are we at that point? And is, are we at, with ridership up and the environmental impacts of trains being looked at as a positive, do you think there's a turnaround for it?
Ridership is up in the Northeast Corridor. The numbers from Amtrak are very encouraging in terms of the, particularly the Acela between Boston and Washington, and a growing sort of acceptance that this is actually an extremely attractive alternative to the bother and waste of short-haul airline routes. As for the future of this, you know, we can look to high-speed rail, particularly in California, where if everything goes exactly correct, there will be a 2.5-hour express between Los Angeles and San Francisco by 2028. This is dependent on, of course, the number of court cases being resolved, whether the federal government will continue to fund it past the Obama presidency. It's certainly an encouraging development, and as an inspiration, I think it'll be most important.
We've been talking about high-speed rail in this country for decades. What has taken so long?
It is not completely congruent with, this is my theory, by the way, not completely congruent with the American idea of liberty. With a train, you're on someone else's schedule. It's inflexible. You know, when you arrive at your destination, you're on foot, or you need a, you know, superb sort of city metro to get you eventually where you're going. And in America, we just love the convenience and flexibility of the automobile. You know, and a high-speed rail is also extraordinarily expensive to build. This California project is $68 billion and rising.
You write about China and their rail system in the book, and it's an interesting comparison, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that China is also a cautionary tale. As you know, they've spent huge sums of money to link up all their major cities with high-speed rail. And by 2018, every city in China with a population of more than 500,000 is going to have a high-speed rail link. And there's 6,000 miles of this track that are operational right now. But some of the construction methods were done hastily. The financing was absolutely terrible. They borrowed deeply to build this, and it's still uncertain if they can pay off that debt. So we can look to China for an inspiration, but we should also sort of beware of some of what went on there.
I think you write about this in a wonderful way about both the mystery and the romance of the train.
There is no vehicle that quite has the panache of the train, and the romantic sort of image around it, the way that strangers meet casually in a way that they just don't do in airports or bus stations. You know, there's been an exoticism around this conveyance ever since the 1820s.
And there is a comfort, isn't there?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the tidal sway of the carriages, the way that you're sort of like lulled to sleep and, you know, watching the landscape sort of click past. It's a really quite a sensual experience.
So as you come out of researching this book, how optimistic are you about the future?
You know, we are always going to have trains in America. There's always going to be political support for Amtrak, even though it doesn't make money. It really shouldn't make money, in a sense. These sort of national transportation systems are, by definition, you know, living on subsidies. There will always be a place for them. I think the place should be one of much more daily use, sort of less as a sentimental, you know, relic of yesteryear.
The name of the book is Train, Riding the Rails That Created the Modern World from the Trans-Siberian to the Southwest Chief. It is published by Viking. Tom Zellner, a great pleasure. Thank you very much and best of luck with the book.
Thanks for having me back, Joe.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Train. It's published by Viking. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.